in the SEC West, but I don't
and think A&M and Jimbo down in A&M now.
Yeah, we'll see about that.
Oh.
We'll see about that. I don't think that's going to go over as well as some might think, especially because mm-hmm. Jimbo already has all of his money guaranteed. It does not matter how he performs.
Well, that's very true. So,
especially with just his track record with FSU and his greed for money, I guess you could kind of put it. Which, I mean, like, who wouldn't hop on a 10-year, $75 million contract? Like, you would just be dumb to not take that. But he doesn't like a whole lot of all the tradition and the pompous that goes into college football a lot of the time. And Texas A&M has a lot of tradition. So, like I said, the SEC West, I would say, is the second toughest division, but you can't tell me that that's any tougher than Ohio State, Michigan State, Penn State, Michigan. Those four teams. I mean, two of those teams have made the college football playoff. Penn State got snubbed out of one, and then Michigan has Jim Harbaugh, I should say. So,
okay.
What you got?
Before I make my pick, before I get there, the reason I wouldn't say the Big Ten and East, in my opinion, is because all four of those teams have at least three free wins every single season in Rutgers, Indiana, and Maryland. And I didn't even look it up, but do you know the last time any of those teams beat any of those top four teams? And I'm not including Michigan State's dismal season last year. Like, Rutgers doesn't beat them. Indiana hangs on for three quarters, and their athletes, and they're just not as deep as an Ohio State to stick with them. Maryland fluctuates way too much ever since they left the ACC. So, in my eyes, I don't want to sound like a homer, but the ACC Atlantic, in my eyes, is
the
best division, because so Clemson or Florida State has made all four college football playoffs. Clemson has three of them, obviously. And then look at Louisville, Bobby Petrino, perennial. They're going to give you at least eight wins a year. They're going to upset one of the other teams a year. Then you got NC State, who's going to be really good this year with their quarterback back for another year. They're always a tough team to play. That's one of the toughest places to play in college football, in my opinion. I've been there twice. It's really tough. And then you got Wake Forest, who people like to scoff at, but their program on the rise. Is it Dave Clawson? Is that his name?
That sounds about right. I mean, I'm looking at the standings right now. They went 8-5 last year.
Yeah, only one team in the Atlantic did not make a bowl game, and that was Syracuse. They upset Clemson and are building a good program under Dino Babers. Hopefully, I got your name right. One of those two pronunciations. So then Boston College, who went 7-6, and it's kind of funny because that's like one of their best seasons in recent memory. So you have two gimmies because Wake Forest played FSU tough. Let me look at the schedule real quick. Wake Forest versus Clemson. Oh, of course it shows me this year. I want to look at last year. Let me type in
Wake Forest versus Clemson. They lost 28-14 on October
7th. Clemson.
On the road, yes.
In Clemson. So that's a program on the rise. And then, you know, you look across the conference, you're going to face at least two or three cross-conference opponents. And you have Miami, Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech with that triple option is not fun to prep for in a short week. Duke is going to be well-coached. It's probably a win. Same with Virginia. Pittsburgh is on the rise. North Carolina, we'll get to North Carolina in a second. But I'm just thinking, you know, the Atlantic has the firepower up top to match the Big Ten East. Is it the East or still the victors and legends?
No, but they finally decided to stop being stupid and went east and west instead of leaders and legends. When that first came out after Nebraska joined, and then they were like, oh, yeah, let's do the Big Ten Championship, leaders and legends. I'm like, dude, those are the two worst possible division names you could ever give a conference. Like, why are you making it so hard on yourself?
Yeah, I mean, but that's another story for another day. Exactly. But, like, I don't know. I just look at that and I just don't think Michigan's that good. I think they hype it up way too much with Harbaugh, and they've done nothing on the field to prove to me otherwise that they should be a perennial top 20 team, and they're consistently ranked in the top 10. And they talking about team that chokes in the big game. He hasn't made a single Big Ten championship game. Penn State, yeah. We'll see how they are. You love Saquon in college. We'll see if Trace McSorley can carry that team without Saquon. James Franklin's a great coach. So we'll see about that. But I actually think that SEC West is deeper than the Big Ten. We're looking at this in different ways. I'm looking at it as week in, week out, are you going to get a tough game? And ACC, I feel like you are. SEC West, you know, take out Bama. They're the outlier. Auburn LSU, good game. Auburn Mississippi State, good game. LSU to A&M, even with Kevin Sumlin, that's a good game. Ole Miss, we have no idea how they're going to react with their sanctions. Arkansas, they got a new coach, right?
Yeah, I don't think Brett Bielema's there anymore. I feel like he got fired.
I think they got the guy. Dang it, not recruiting. Morris. Yeah, Chad Morris. Where is he from?
Oh, SMU.
Yeah, yeah, they got SMU. He was the former Clemson offensive coordinator. So they're going to get a complete. They're not going to be stuck in the 1960s running I formation power back now. So they're on the rise. So, like, that's another one. And I know you sleep on it. I know you talked a little smack about them earlier, but in terms of tough places to play week in, week out, the Big 12, you know, going to Kansas State's not easy. Iowa State's went 8-5, and they beat Oklahoma, right?
No, Ohio State, or not Ohio State, Iowa. Yeah, they beat
State. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Iowa State beat Oklahoma, dude. Iowa State. Who is their coach? I'm looking it up right now.
Short little guy, short tan guy.
Matt Campbell, man.
Hoping it sounded racist or thing like that.
He was going to be a huge coaching candidate this past offseason, but then Iowa State locked him down. He signed a 6-year, $22.5 million extension this past November. So they locked him down for the long-term future, but he was a guy that was definitely going to be shopping his name, because I wouldn't have been surprised if he would have been in the running for, honestly, even the Florida job.
Well, they got Dirty Dan Mullen.
Oh, yeah.
That's a safe hire, though.
It's a safe hire. It's lateral with a slight trajectory. I mean, in terms of offensive play, it should be much, much better. But I don't think Florida's going to accept where he's going to take them to. But I could be wrong, and I hope I'm wrong, because college football is better when FSU Florida is a great game.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've watched a lot of Mississippi State games the past couple of years, and I can't tell you how much their fans get so frustrated with this play calling. So, the bias Florida State alum in me is like, I mean, I kind of hope it keeps going to the dumpster, but there's no reason to think it won't. Back to the Big 12. Oklahoma's always going to be there. TCU, one of the best coach teams in the country. OK State, they're not going to make the playoff ever because they blow too many games, but they're locked in for 9 to 10 wins. Iowa State, they have their coach. Bill Snyder's still kicking it in Manhattan, Kansas somehow. Excuse me. Texas, Todd Herman, got him going in the right way. West Virginia.
Not to interject, but did you hear what Tom Herman said about his team?
I did not.
He got asked, how many championship caliber players do you have on your team? And allegedly, he hesitated and then didn't really list any names. He goes, yeah, we pretty much have like one or two guys, but we don't have anyone that's really stuck out and impressed me that they're caliber changing, program changing talents. Which have you seen their
Have you seen their new facilities?
No, I haven't seen any pictures. Are they nice? I can only imagine.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not really going to say that these players, quote unquote, don't deserve it, but when you're spoiled to the umpteenth degree, you're not going to work as hard, I feel like. And as you're looking them up on Texas, they all have custom lockers. I mean, there's a lot of money, being pumped into all these schools and all their facilities and stuff, because that's just the way of the world these days. You have to have nice facilities, all the amenities you can possibly need, pool tables, you know, FSU still doesn't have a standalone football facility, even though we just saw a massive donation come into quote unquote the athletics department, but we have a good understanding where that's going to go. But I can't tell if you're making a face looking at the Texas facilities. but yeah, so never mind. I guess Texas is still a couple years away. So the only, go ahead.
No, I agree. I think Texas still has one. They have at least 2 years till they start competing with Oklahoma in the Red. I mean, obviously that's a rival game, but Texas still is a farther away than I'd like to see.
Do you think they're going to give Herman patience, the time to build it up?
All I'm saying, if it's not Tom Herman, then who?
I don't think that you should have fired Charlie Strong.
Wow. I think Charlie Strong was way too in over his head at Texas. He had that run at Louisville with Teddy B, and it was awesome. But
he, maybe players just don't want to go to Texas anymore. And the only reason we are so infatuated with Texas football is because when we were younger, like when I was 6 or 7, Ricky Williams was running wild. And then Vince Young came in immediately after that. Vince Young, Roy Williams, and then Cole McCoy and Jordan Shipley.
Yeah, dude, Jordan Shipley was one of my favorite college football receivers of my childhood, honestly. Watching him finesse the dudes, even though he's just a small white guy, it was awesome.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Like, people loved it. I listened to another podcast, and they love to rag on Mac Brown, you know, because Mac Brown's calling card is like, we got to get 5 stars. We got to get 5 stars. And maybe that program was just Mac Brown being a great coach, and we're underrating him, because you follow recruiting more closely than me. Have they had a top end recruiting class in the last 5-6 years?
Not that I know of. I mean, I'll pull up the Rivals rankings right now, see what we got. But they haven't been overly impressive. I mean, people used to not be able to go into Texas and get guys, to get the top end guys, because if UT offered, it was over. Those guys were going to Texas. But now it's not like that as much.
Now they're going to Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Alabama's coming in. Florida State's coming in. LSU's coming in. There's a lot of mobilization now, which is why you and I both love Taggart, because he goes to California. He goes, uses the whole country and says, hey, why not Florida State? We have this. We have that. We have everything you need. And we put people in the NFL who is, as you're looking at the recruiting rankings, do you know any Texas players in the last 4 to 5 years who were first round picks or have made a big, I know it's not college, but that have made a big impact on the pro level? I can't think of one.
they had their left tackle get drafted this year. But hey, I'm looking at the rankings, and this should, they had 27 total recruit, they had 27 signings in their last draft, in their last, in the class of 2018, which okay. got them all the way up to fourth in the rankings. But here's the kicker. They have 27. Third place is USC with 18. Their average star rating, USC, 4.28. Texas, 3.67. They are the lowest on, wow, they are the lowest star rating. Not that it's just stars, not really a big deal, obviously, because stars don't matter, but it's just something to kind of bait judge teams off of and compare. Oklahoma had a 3.61, and they were the eighth ranked team. So Texas and Oklahoma both are the lower, on the lower end of the star ratings for the top 10 for the 2018 class. So, I mean, Texas is getting the recruits, but we'll see. We'll see.
How, but they're clearly not getting the top end recruits in Texas. And I'm looking at their draft history in the NFL. And I'm gonna go in order. Starting in 2008, five players drafted. The two ones that stand out, you probably recognize Lima Swede, but he didn't really do much in the NFL. So Jamal Charles, Jermichael Finley. Next year, you had four players drafted. Number one, only one that's still in the league making rounds, Brian Arakpo. Great player for the Titans. 2010, Earl Thomas, Lamar Houston, Jordan Shipley, Colt McCoy. Then, wow. 2011, Sam Acho. Nah, he's all right. 2012, only three players. Emmanuel Acho is the only one that's still in the NFL. 2013, three players. Kenny Vaccaro, can't find a job for our... I got him confused. Kenny Vaccaro, Marquise Goodwin, Alex Okafor. Solid players. 2015, five players drafted, and Malcolm Brown, Jordan Hicks, Quandre Diggs. Three okay players. 2016, one player drafted in the fourth round, Hassan Ridgeway. Never heard of him. 2017, one player drafted, Deontay Foreman, Torres Achilles, in the third round. This year, four players drafted. Connor Williams, that O-lineman, got drafted to the Cowboys, Malik Jefferson, and then a punter and a safety. So I know NFL draft picks isn't the best way to gauge it, but it seems like they're getting to Texas and they're not getting developed. But they're getting developed on the defensive end, which is why I felt like Charlie Strong was doing something right, although his team was still getting run up the field. So, I mean, we went way off on a tangent here about Texas, but it's fine. Back to the subject in hand. So, my conferences in order go ACC Atlantic, SEC West, and then, I mean, we dismissed the Pac-12.
But well, they're just not, you don't have any shirt. Maybe when you had Oregon at its peak and Stanford going at it, maybe you could convince me that they might, that they're a top four. Dude, they're just, it's, they're the same. What you said about the Big Ten East, about them not really being deep enough, is exactly what the Pac-12 is. They don't have near the firepower that an Ohio State is. But then their bottom feeders, like Colorado's really disappointing. Utah continually disappoints when they shouldn't.
Underwhelms, yeah.
Yeah, it's just they're so underwhelming in so many games. And the Pac... Maybe that's... I don't... The Pac-12 really is a head-scratcher to me because, I mean, you have teams like Washington... And Chris Peterson is going to be the guy. Pac-12 is on the rise because Chris Peterson's awesome. He is fantastic. He did a great job when he coached at Boise. And I have he's one of my favorite coaches in college football. You got Chip Kelly coming back to UCLA. That's awesome. David Shaw is one of the best.
I forgot about that.
David Shaw is one of the best college football coaches in the country. Because they run the football really well. They have really good offensive linemen. And they play really physical, solid defense. But outside of that, Arizona's very underwhelming. Herm Edwards is a very big question mark at Arizona State. Utah continually underwhelms. Like I said, Oregon State's never going to be good. Oregon's got to bounce back after losing Taggart and getting away from the Chip Kelly dynasty. What can Mario Cristobal do there? It's just there are so many unknowns in the Pac-12, and there are so many teams, so many schools that need to prove themselves that they belong in the, honestly, even the college football playoff discussion, because Washington represented them 1 year and got throttled.
Oh, yeah.
So
Oregon represented them well. They destroyed Florida State 59-20. I remember that game.
But like I said, that was
spot on.
That was Scott Mariota, Frost, yeah. Mark Helfrich. This is a new era of Oregon Duck football. If Scott Frost and Mark Helfrich or Chip Kelly still at Oregon somehow, some way, Oregon would have never stopped. But
well, they have their quarterback now. That's the thing. Is that you got to follow who has the best. I feel like, unless you're Alabama, or maybe even Clemson, whoever has the best quarterbacks that's who's going to be at the top. Or an Ohio State with all the athletes they have. So, Pac-12 is probably the most fascinating conference in my eyes this year. Because we did our picks last year. I don't know if all the listeners stay tuned, but I went off the wall and I picked Washington because they have Jake Browning still. I picked them to make the playoff. But I can easily see them losing to Stanford, losing to Oregon, because Oregon has Justin Herbert. Is that how you say his name?
Yes. And so, he's awesome. He's good. Awesome.
When he was in the lineup for Oregon, they were a great team. And USC doesn't have Darnold. Like you said, Arizona is going to be fun. Khalil Dukes? What's his name? I'll look it up real quick. Khalil Mack. No. That's the completely wrong.
I feel like it's Khalil Tate, but yeah, Khalil Tate, Arizona.
Yeah. What'd I say? Khalil Duke?
Yes.
Okay. So Khalil Tate, Arizona. He was one of the most fun football players to watch. UCLA, Chip Kelly. That's just maybe not be the toughest, but it's definitely the most intriguing.
Pac-12 after dark is going to be some great football to watch this year. Some great.
It always
football.
Is.
It always is, and it honestly never disappoints. Some of the craziest games come out of the Pac-12, but this year I really college football is going to be great this year, absolutely great.
I know it's building up to be good, and we're not even talking about like the mid majors, because we talked last week for a while about them. I'm excited about the AAC, UCF. USF with Charlie Strong again. Memphis still has that quarterback, right? I don't think he went pro.
Riley Ferguson? Nah, I think he's gone. I want to say he's gone.
I'll look
Oh, he actually got signed by, I'm reading CBS Sports.
Oh, the Bucks.
He's going to Tampa.
Oh.
He's going to be one of our training camp arms. So
Get him in right now. Start him over. Start him over with Jameis, week four. I mean, he makes plays.
Dude, that guy is a baller.
Okay, so we fit on all five major conferences. We'll end the conference discussion with this. What's the weakest division? The Big Ten West? It's either the Big Ten and West. Can't talk right now. Big Ten West, the ACC Coastal, or I don't think it's the Pac-12 North, because Washington, Stanford, Oregon. That's a pretty strong three.
And you can't peg the South. Can you peg the Pac-12? You can't peg the Pac-12 South, not with UCLA, USC.
Mm-hmm.
It kills me to say it, but I have to go Big Ten West.
I say that or SEC East.
I think it's a toss-up on one of those two. But the thing is like it's been Wisconsin's world in the Big Ten West for the last, 5 years? And Iowa sucks.
But Iowa... Wasn't Iowa a game away from the national championship. National championship. I can't talk tonight. National championship when they faced Michigan State. I know they got pummeled in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, but they were. I mean, but if you look at Iowa, dude, every time they have a good season, it's because they got the weakest schedule. But they never really, you never watch Iowa football and you're going to be like, ooh, wow, that was nice. Ooh, that's pretty. Ooh, that's sustainable. Nah, dude.
If you're an old, if like an old school high school coach,
it's an old school, dude. Kirk Ferentz is going into his, he's going into his 20th year coaching there. You don't, they play really physical football. Great. They generate great NFL offensive linemen, just like Wisconsin does. But outside of that, how many guys come out of Iowa that are impressive?
You want to hear their out-of-conference schedule this year?
Yes.
All right. So you know they play Iowa State always. That's always actually, that's like growing as a fun game.
That's always a really, yes, that's a really fun, that's a really fun game to watch always.
They stepped out of their, out of their comfort zone and are hosting Northern Illinois. Then they play Iowa State at home. Oh, my God. I hate to break it. I haven't even looked at the roster. This is going to be another Iowa year. I hate to break it to you because they have Northern Illinois at home, Iowa State at home. Then they play Northern Iowa at home and then Wisconsin at home. If they can get through that 4-0, their only pretty much losable game is at Penn State, and because they play Northwestern at home and they end this season with Nebraska at home. So for all this smack we're talking, I wouldn't be shocked if they did it, but I have Wisconsin beating them. But it's just like, it's just the two things that, like, between the Big Ten, Big Ten West, but Nebraska's going to be, you know, Nebraska's going to be a lot better.
I, you know, really that. Finally hope so, man. But
that's the most passionate thing you said the whole podcast. But looking at them and then the SEC East, there's just no like exciting football teams. Tennessee with Jeremy Pruitt, they're going to be just Alabama, try to be Alabama, and all they're going to do is, you know, play good defense, sound defense, and run a watered-down version of the spread offense with, because they're not going to get the offensive players there yet. Vanderbilt, come on now.
It's a baseball school.
Phenomenal baseball and educational school.
Yes.
Phenomenal. Missouri, they had a better year, but ever since their coach left, I'm drawing blank on his name, and they stopped recruiting those defensive linemen, their defensive line coach left, they're nothing. They just lost their, was it their head coach? Yeah, their head coach is now at UCF. I'm pretty sure.
Is that what happened?
I'm 99% sure, which is kind of saying something, because an athletic and a group of five conferences job is more attractive than an SEC East job for a team that's went to the conference championship like three of the past 6 years. I'm pretty sure he went there.
I mean, Barry Odom's now the head coach at Missouri, and I have no idea who that is. I mean, Missouri had their own troubles going on, though, back a while ago. So the fact that they can even field a football team is... Missouri's not good. They haven't been good for a long time. Since they, honestly, they made the SEC championship game that 1 year. But other than that, it's kind of, they kind of, honestly, they remind me a lot of Nebraska and the Big Ten, as in they could be promising, but they're not. But
okay,
now Nebraska.
It wasn't their head coach. It wasn't their head coach. It was their offensive coordinator and quarterback coach. And you were, how old were you in 2000? Like 3 years old?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're not really, you don't remember this quarterback watching him play, but I do. And that is Josh Heupel. I'm pretty sure I'm saying that last name right. He was the quarterback of Oklahoma. He was consensus All-American, AP Player of the Year, Walter Camp Award, Archie Griffin Award, Quarterback of the Year in 2000, and he led him to the BCS National Championship game. And if I'm correct, is this the one that they won? I'm trying to look. Sorry, this is, I know this isn't really. Yeah, He beat Florida State 13-2. That's crazy to think about. But yeah, so he's taking that spread offense right down there. So Missouri, they have their quarterback, but we don't know how long it's going to be. Kentucky, Mark Stoops, doing good, but still not there. South Carolina went 9-4, but that's because four losses came against the four good teams they played the whole year. So Georgia's going to run that division. That's one team. So I'll let you conclude the conference/division talk. No, well, yeah. So strong. Who's the weakest division? You're still going Big Ten West?
Yeah, I have to go Big Ten West until someone other than Wisconsin shows me that they're a legitimate force. And I don't consider Iowa a legitimate force because they just, you read their schedule and they're going to reap the benefits of an easy schedule. And then everyone's going to be talking about them like, oh yeah, Iowa 9-1. And then you're going to get them into, well, let's say they make the Big Ten championship and they're just going to get blown out by probably more than likely the Ohio State team that's just waiting for them.
Yeah. So did we pick best conference? We didn't do best conference.
We were just talking divisions.
All right. So we'll go with that. Then we'll move on to Larry Fedora real quick, and then conclude with the new kickoff. I can't talk tonight, man. The new kickoff rules. All right. So toughest conference, top to bottom.
ACC.
I think ACC or Big 12. ACC.
ACC.
They had 9. They had 1, 2, 3. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 of their 11, 12, 13, 14. 11 of their 14 teams made a bowl game. No, 10 of their 14 teams made a bowl game. And the ones that didn't had 5, 2 of them had 5 wins. Syracuse beat Clemson, and then North Carolina. Yeah. That's a great segue. North Carolina went 1-7 in the conference last year, and 3-9 overall, and their coach made headlines, not for the right reasons, at his ACC conference. And this is just some quotes. These are the most important quotes, and I feel like, and then we'll go to the next thing. So we try not to get political here. We're not going to get political here. But he said, and I quote, "Our game," meaning football, "is under attack. I fear that the game will be pushed so far from what we know that we won't recognize it 10 years from now. And if it does, our country will go down too." So we're going to leave the last sentence of "our country will go down too" to open interpretation. I mean, I'm not going to go down here and say that the backbone of our country is football. So as a football player who you played... You were a Luch chief, right? You played flag?
Yeah, I was a Luch chief.
All right, so you're a fellow Luch chief, and you played all 4 years in high school?
I played all 4 years in high school. I think I played 9 organized years of tackle football.
Really? So you didn't play 13 years? You didn't play from like 5? I don't know when you started playing.
Nah, because I started playing tackle football. I played when I was 7, and then I moved to Idaho. But in Idaho, they don't start tackle football till 4th grade.
Oh,
so I had to take a year perfect. Off.
That's perfect. So you played 9 years. I played 6 years. I never played high school, though. So first, I'll start with this. Do you feel like a sport that we love in football, do you feel like it's under attack?
I wouldn't necessarily say it's under attack, but... If football's heading in the right direction in terms of player safety, but I think he's speaking more to that we're changing so many rules and that we're too concerned with player safety and that it's just going to ruin the game. I don't necessarily think that the game is under attack, but I think if the game doesn't continue to adapt, then it will fall off. Because there's just too much research that comes out medically about concussions to disregard the the severity of what football can lead to after life. But you also have to keep in mind, while we are getting continued research and while we are getting, you know, we're starting to we're starting to get a grasp on CTE and how football affects it and how brain injuries affect CTE, and like starting to get a better understanding of how concussions and everything work and how to treat them. You also have to take into effect, or you have to take into consideration, that while we're getting a better understanding of these things, our technology is also evolving in terms of helmets, the rules, and like you don't see nearly many as head-to-head plays as you used to about even like 5 to 8 years ago, because then they started cracking down and everyone got real upset that they were cracking down. But then the coaches started to adapt, and the coaches is like, we can't lose you in college football. We can't lose you for half. If you get a targeting penalty, we can't lose you. We can't lose you for a targeting penalty. So we got to teach these guys how to tackle better. And the only way to get good at tackling, that this is the one thing that's upset me so much, is that we get mad and upset at all these college players, all these NFL players, about not tackling correctly, about not wrapping up, squaring their shoulders, getting a good base, dropping their hips, firing through the tackle, and making a sound tackle, because we get upset over all these head-to-head crazy blow-up plays. You wonder why that we have these? It's because the NFL, college football, and the high school regulation, they started cracking down on how much padded practice and how much tackling you can do. The only way to get better at tackling and to do it correctly is to practice it. Yeah, you have to practice tackling to be good at practice, or to be good at tackling. Mm-hmm. If you don't practice it, how can you expect someone to go onto the game and do it? So I think a big mistake that they made was trying to limit the amount of practice contact. While yes, it should be trimmed down and you shouldn't have that, you need to be teaching players how to tackle, not dummies, but tackle players, tackle people, because otherwise then you see all these crazy blow-up plays and then you get guys that are dying on the football field because you don't have guys that are tackling right, and there's a guy going up for the air and you're just launching your helmet straight into his, hoping that he drops the ball.
Yeah, that's something that when I grew up playing youth football, that's what, I mean, I probably had some of the best youth football coaches that youth football had to offer, especially in my area, because that's all we did. We wouldn't even use dummies. We would tackle each other, just wrap up, and that's the best way to get a best tackle. And that's probably my favorite thing to watch in football, is when I actually see a player wrap up, use their hips, and drive through, because, you know, you can't hit what you can't see. And all these players diving around, and then they get up and celebrate because they made that diving play. No, you just, that's why the ACL injuries are being increased a little bit, because there's more helmet to bone contact and like that. Although they did change that by saying D-backs and stuff, you can't go low on a quarterback, you can't go low on receivers and stuff like that in the open field. And I just don't see how the practice time, knowing what we know with concussions, ever going to change. And it's frustrating for the coaches, which is why I understand the frustration about Larry Fedora, you know, what he says. His wording probably wasn't the best, saying we're under attack and our country's going to go down with it and stuff like that. But these coaches only get, I think, like 20 hours. And I don't even think it's 20 hours. I think they get like less than that a week, and they get 2 days of contact. And that's the same thing in the NFL. It's just, there's no time to coach these players. But do you feel like, I mean, this is just, I'm trying to figure out where I want to go with this. It's like, the 7-on-7 is very prominent now. There's no tackling that. It's all lunging for flags. And we're seeing the game. I feel like an angle that doesn't get talked about as a lot is now that we're passing the ball a lot more. So we have these quick, instead of like running backs just plodding into the back and linebackers making wrapped up tackles, we have safeties who are coming full speed and they're just trying to bring down the receiver or running back in the open field as quickly as possible, because the game's so spread out, there's more room to maneuver. So I feel like that's why the concussions are kind of on the rise. I mean, but we see, I'm talking in circles right now because I don't know how to explain this outside of what you said, which is we need more practice with tackling. We need coaches who are going to teach them. And, you know, they spend half the season in circuits. Like, I mean, you probably know better than me about high school circuits and stuff like that. But it's kind of like the AAU in basketball where they're not doing fundamentals half the year. They're in just playing tournaments and playing games and just dunking and stuff like that. And they're not learning how to dribble, shoot, make the right pass. No one even knows how to post up. And that's something that frustrates me all the time. But in football, the 7-on-7 coaches, the Nike sponsorships and stuff like that, they're gaining so much prominence in the sport that no one understands the basic fundamental of defense, which is to tackle. And I don't know if it's under attack. I think in 10 years, football will still be here. And I feel like the people I talk to who risk, quote, they risk their lives to play this game, knowing the consequences of it, they do it all over again. Like Luke Kuechly had one of the most terrifying injuries I've ever seen. And you know he was dying to play football the next day when he could think straight. So I don't think it's necessarily under attack and at risk in the next 10 to 20 years. But now that we're going to have this CTE breakthrough where we're going to be able to diagnose it before when people are alive and earlier and stuff like that, a lot of people are going to not want to do it. A lot of people are going to be disturbed by it. But I don't think that the game's going to go away. I just would really like to see a more fundamental sport and product on the field.
I really, to kind of just build off that, the whole 7-on-7 thing, I really think that 7-on-7 should be more prominent in youth football because that would develop a lot of skills that young players don't have. And having a basis of 7-on-7 would allow them to... It would allow a foundation for where football is headed. Like if you look at all these spread offenses, a lot of it is a lot of 7-on-7 ball. But just because it's an interesting situation because kids keep getting younger and younger and play the football, and now football is starting to transcend with all these parents and social media and everything. It's starting to transcend into something like AAU basketball, and I don't think that's what football needs. I don't think that you need to be having 8, 9, 10-year-olds going out there hitting each other helmet to helmet, but I do think that you can still keep the integrity of the game. I mean, just for example, like we were talking before, you were watching that 7-on-7 stuff on NFL Network with Seneca mm-hmm. Wallace and stuff. Like, it's not like, obviously, those are grown full men throwing a football around and it's going to be pretty to watch, but I think... it's just tough, man, because if you don't teach these kids fundamentals and then you just all are worried about winning, but you don't teach them the fundamentals like you were talking about, like even in basketball, no one knows how to post up anymore. No one. And it's sad because posting up is such an intricate part. Being able to post up is such an intricate part of basketball. And the same thing with football, being able to tackle someone safely. If you make a sound tackle, it's the safest way to tackle someone, whether you're playing football or you're actually like out in the real world making a tackle. You know what I mean? It's just,
yeah,
I just don't understand. They're so worried about player safety, but the best way to, you don't prevent players are going to get hurt. It's part of playing the sport. It's what they sign up for. But instead of treating them like they're China, dolls or something, and being like, oh, let's just not have you practice, why don't you just be like, you need to emphasize tackling during practice and teach them proper techniques. I just don't, you know, if you want to be good at anything, you don't just do less of it in hopes that you don't get the bad outcomes of something. You work at it, and you work at it harder, and you try to figure out what works and what doesn't work. And I just, it's very frustrating when I keep seeing these limitations on, honestly, just tackling. And then you get guys that go into games and they have, it's obvious that their coaches haven't taught them tackling, because once you get to the college game, how much tackling are you really learning? You know, how much fundamental tackling are you learning?
Mm-hmm.
Not really, because the coaches are so limited in how many hours they can spend with a student athlete. But then on the flip side, like, they're not going to be focused on tackling during practice. They're going to be focused on implementing the game plan and making sure everyone understands what their job is going into Saturday. And so you completely take out the, you just have to be there and you'll make a play. You're athletic enough. Yeah, of course. These guys are playing college football. Of course they're athletic enough. But you got to be able to tackle someone, because that's when, if you don't teach the game right, that's when people get hurt, even more so than they should.
And it's not even the safest way for, the tackler. The good ball carrier, he's just going to get wrapped up and he's going to get put on the ground.
The worst happens when you get tackled in a sound tackle is one of the biggest, in terms of head injuries, you might smack your head on the turf and that might hurt from the whiplash. But other than that, the thing that's going to hurt the most is if you get a shoulder pad into the stomach, you might get the wind knocked out of you.
Mm-hmm. I feel like everyone's going for the big hit. Everyone wants to make that boom, and that's what fans still love, because, you know, that's what get, like hockey, everyone loves the open ice check, even though the guys can barely skate off and stuff like that. But, like, think about the best linebackers in football. Bobby Wagner, Telvin Smith, Kuechly, Thomas Davis. Out of them, Kuechly's the only one with concussion problems. I keep going Sean Lee. Kuechly has concussion problems, but, I mean, those are violent hits where he gets, like, blindsided and stuff. Like, all these guys make sound, fundamental tackles. That's what all the best open field tacklers do. And a lot of those guys, they play a lot. I mean, besides Kuechly and Sean Lee, the rest of those guys rarely miss games because they're making consistent tackles. Like Telvin, the way Telvin tackles is he explodes up and like wraps you around your chest and stuff like that. That's like a weird form of tackling, but it's effective for him. So I don't know. You were probably taught the same thing as me. I mean, you were a quarterback growing up. I played linebacker and running back growing up, and I was taught literally just watch the belt buckle, and then once it just attack, helmet outside of the hip, and then that's when you just bring him down.
Yeah, and helmet outside of the hip. Fire the arms through, grab some cloth on the back of their shoulder pads, break the back, and put them down.
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, that's why I feel like a player like Chris Borland, who retired, he wasn't going out there. He was just doing fundamentals, and that's why he was so effective, and that's why he legit replaced Patrick Willis. And the 49ers didn't really skip that big of a beat, and then he retired because he saw what CTE can do. So I just want, I mean, I feel like the game's not under attack, and I feel like it's on both coaches who can do a better job of doing tackle drills and stuff like that, and the NFLPA and the Players Association, they need to come to an agreement to get more coaching time. You know, the only way you're going to get better, only way the game's going to get safer is, that's the thing, is that they want to clean up the game. They don't want concussions, and they feel like them practicing and doing that helmet-to-helmet contact more often is going to increase the concussions and stuff like that. And who are we to know? The science is so in an immature state that we don't know. We don't know how effective how much practice and learning how to tackle correctly does that. I mean, you don't have to go full speed. Just slowly, go 60% and just go to the fundamentals. Just go through that. And then I don't know. We feel like we're both, I don't even know if you sound like we're old men in our lawn yelling at, oh, you need to go back to this way and stuff like that. But we're just like, I just want to see proper tackling. And that's honestly, you know, who doesn't love the 60-yard play where the guy jukes out six people? But you know what happens on all those 60-yard plays? Arm tackling, and diving at people's legs, you never see someone break through a fundamental tackle. And that's what would make the game better. It may not make the game more exciting to the regular fan, the fantasy football player, because it's going to limit big plays. But for the football purist, I like to call us as, we're like a nice blend of like old school, new school in terms of what we want, because we love the spread game, but we just want to see good fundamentals tackling. Like, I would get, nothing gets me more excited than like a good fundamental tackling and then a beautiful zone block run scheme. It's just, both of those are just so fundamentally based and just so well coach based that I just want to see better of both of those. I want to see more. I just want to see that because, you know, last thing I'll say about this is like that Julio Jones play against the Packers when the Falcons destroyed them in the conference championship game. He literally stiff-armed like five guys, and you see all of them like reaching like Frankenstein to tackling him with their arms. No, the only way you're going to bring down Julio Jones, that's how you and I were probably able to bring down players twice our size, because you grab the hips, the legs can't go anywhere. It's just like simple like that, and it just frustrates me sometimes.
It's physics that if you grab their legs, they you can't move. You can't go anywhere. If you get their hips and you square them up, and they either got to go through you, but if you're holding on to the hips, you know, they got to either take you with them or you're pulling them down. But it's just kind of bounce off of what you said in terms of, as much as I am a football purist and I want to see the good tackling for my own selfish interests, the biggest reason that I want to see proper tackling and the reason I want to hear about more tackling being implemented at practice, more proper tackling being implemented at practice, is as much as I love seeing a good tackle, it's just going to keep the players safer.
Mm-hmm.
Like they go, yeah, and they're absolutely right. Like they're trying to change these rules. Like, for example, they changed the college football kickoff rule, and that's to try to eliminate, because the kickoff's the most dangerous play in football, and that's, everyone knows that. It's not even close, because you got 11, you got 10 guys running straight at each other for 75 yards or for 60, 70 yards, and you got 11 guys that are, or yeah, you got 10 guys plus one guy with the ball waiting for all of them to get down there, and they're blocking. Like, it's where guys are moving at their fastest, and it's the most dangerous play. But if you saw proper tackling, you saw proper blocking, fundamentals trump anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that's in every sport.
Yeah, I mean, just look at, I mean, AB is going to play forever, man, because he just has the fundamentals.
Yep.
That's why he's going to go down with one of the greatest wide receivers, just because he can route run and he just has all the fundamentals.
Yeah, it's, I know. Well, that new college rule for people, we're not going to dive into it because we've been talking about player safety for like 20, 30 minutes now, is that the return man can call a fair catch inside the 20-yard line and the ball will be placed at the 25-yard line. And what that's going to do is, if that transitions to the NFL, that's going to eliminate like 20 jobs per team, because we're not going to need, it's going to eliminate like 10 to 15 jobs, I should say, per team, because there's a lot of specialists and a lot of special teams, and that plays a big role. And then what's the next thing? Are we going to eliminate punting? Are we going to eliminate, I mean, and I don't think kicking.
This is what Fedora's talking about.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know the rule change until you brought it up to me today, so I could see that. But let me look at the CTE remarks real quick. It's because the North Carolina AD came out and defended him. Yeah, he said it was just poorly communicated and that the health and the safety of the students and stuff like that. So obviously that comes first and foremost to them. They like to say that. So we'll just see. I mean, this is like, this is always the biggest talking point because it's so obvious in the football field. We see a player get his head knocked off, not literally knocked off, but concussed. And then it's just like, it just turns you off to a game because you just see them motionless on the floor. Their hands are all sprung up. I mean, they can't move.
Ryan Chase, it's terrifying. Last year with Pittsburgh was,
oh, yeah,
that game against the Bengals. I watched so much football last fall, and that was probably one of the hardest games for me to continue to keep watching because it was just so... I was thinking, and I told Nino this. I told my brother Nino this. I was like, if football keeps going like that, I could see why they shut it down. And that, at that point, I go, I don't know why the Bengals and the Steelers are even in the same division anymore, because those games are like that every single year, and it's such a liability health-wise and safety-wise for all those players. Football cannot be played how the Bengals and the Steelers play football. That's the most unsafe football I've ever seen.
That's when hate transitions into the sport and stuff like that.
I know.
So, but... Well, that's the that's the best note to end it on.
Yeah, I know. What a vibe killer.
I know. Yeah. So I guess we'll end it there. Hopefully that will be the last sad football talk. Obviously, we're going to talk about the future of football and stuff like that more often because it's such a vital part of the game, and you always want to project into the future. But we'll probably start transitioning to a little more NFL talk because college football is just going to be, you know, media quotes and stuff like that. And the coaches, besides Fedora. Oh, and did you see the David Cutcliffe quote, the coach from Duke, where he said how important and exciting punting the football is?
I did not see that.
Yeah, he had a quote where he's like, the punt is still one of the most important plays in football and stuff like that. I'm just like, geez, man. Like, come on, knows the value of punting. I'm just like, yes, punting's important and all, but I feel like you have other things to be worrying about besides punting the football and stuff like that. But we'll probably start talking down. We'll look at some notes of the NFL training camps and talk about that. And football is almost here. 40 days. I think we're close to 40 days away from kickoff. Mm. You report to, you have orientation for FSU training camp in
August 1st.
2 weeks. So that's right around the corner. And, you know, this is everyone's favorite time. I love fall. I mean, best weather, no matter where you are in the world, it's the best weather. You have football season. I mean, baseball season's playoffs. I mean, I know a lot of people don't even watch baseball regular season, but playoff baseball is always exciting. NBA, college basketball, hockey, everything, soccer, everything just picks right back up immediately. So I know you're a World Cup fan. Are you going to keep that wave going to English soccer?
I just need some guidance. I've never had any real guidance on how to get involved in international soccer. So I'm down to try.
August 10th is when the English Premier League starts. I can't tell you what team to pick, because I tell you to pick Liverpool in a heartbeat. But you just, I mean, if you like the World Cup, then there's definitely, I feel like there's more talent on display in the English Premier League and stuff like that. So,
wow.
Because you think about it, international teams are with each other for like 2 months a year. Club teams are literally with each other for 10 months a year practicing. It's like American football in a way, because everyone has like an identity. Like Liverpool plays counter-pressing, and they're run up the field. Other teams just sit back and park and play defense. I mean, like you saw in the World Cup, but it's like exasperated. Like, you know what you're going to get each week and each out in terms of teams, but there's upsets. There's drama because there's no VAR in England, so refs just get every single week. There's just like a headline of like, oh, this wanker ref blew it and stuff like that. Hope I can say wanker on St. Pete Radio, but... It's just stuff like that. So that's gonna do it for us here. Noah, thanks for coming on again.
Thanks for having me on, Michael. I'm excited to be back next week.
All right, take it easy, guys.